I'm Afshin Ratansi, and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the UAE. Julian Assange is free. You can watch our interviews with him exposing Google, Hillary Clinton's attempt to subvert US democracy and blame Russia, let alone NATO war crimes in Iraq and all around the world. It was WikiLeaks that exposed Jake Sullivan, Biden's now national security advisor, writing of how Al-Qaeda was on the same side as the USA. It was WikiLeaks that exposed the present head of the CIA, explaining the US provocation of Russia that would lead to war in Europe. All this, of course, before his torture by Britain and the US-UK plans to assassinate him. Some who have called for his release on Going Underground never got to see him go free. Fashion designer Vivienne Westwood, mentor Gavin McFadyen, Pentagon whistleblower Dan Ellsberg, and the great John Pilger, all of whom passed away while Assange was tortured. With me here in Dubai is Julian's brother, Gabriel Shipton, whose documentary Ithaca charted the struggle to free Julian Assange. Gabriel, thanks so much for coming on the show in our studio to Going Underground. I've got to ask you, first of all, where were you when you heard the news that Joe Biden's Justice Department had been defeated by a man who had been tortured in London, who we know was the target of assassination attempts by Britain and the United States, and of the connivance of Sir Keir Starmer and UK authorities?
Well, I went to see Julian probably around a month ago, Afshin, and he did mention to me at that time that there was probably going to be a resolution down the track, possibly 3 weeks, 4 weeks' time, which I took with a grain of salt at the time. I thought, OK, yeah, let's see what happens. And then about a week before he was put on that jet, I was getting calls from him, very excited calls. From Julian, going through all the little bits of logistics that had been set up. Every day there was some progress, the jet getting locked in, his movement from inside the prison at very early hours in the morning so he could be undetected, taken to Stansted Airport, and the little bits and pieces that were all falling into place. So it was very, very hard to keep that a secret, and it was, you know, essentially a political miracle that this was able to be pulled off. I think all credit due to people like you who have been reporting on this for the many, many years, the last 13, 14 years, and the grassroots efforts by normal people around the world. It sort of restores your faith in humanity to really see normal people giving up their time, giving up their money, their connections, their effort to save Julian Assange.
I know, so inspiring, all those thousands of people, tens of thousands through rain and shine outside those courtrooms. But you didn't think it was a sign of Julian's mental problems that he was so hopeful that this was another? Because he had really bad medical problems in Britain's supermax prison, as far as I understand it. Roger Waters, who's been on this show, I mean, he was shocked. We could see him visibly shocked. John Pilger was shocked so many times after seeing your brother.
Yeah, it was heartbreaking going and seeing him inside that prison, Afshin.
A cell neighbour committed suicide while he was there?
Yes, one of his friends, a Brazilian man, committed suicide, but there's regularly deaths inside that prison. The inmates he's keeping company with sort of the worst of the worst, murderers, all sorts of those sorts of prisoners, and those are the people he keeps company with. He was in a 2x3 metre cell. But in 2019, when Nils Melzer, the UN Special Rapporteur on Torture, went to see him and took those two independent doctors, they found he'd suffering the effects of psychological torture. And that was in 2019. And his situation didn't change. He had that never-ending extradition to a country that had plotted to kill him, hanging over his head. The prison conditions bearing down on his body and his mind. But, you know, that's all over now, Afshin. And now he has time to be with his family. He's out in the Australian bush, enjoying the sunshine, enjoying the bird songs, putting his feet in the sand. So I think happier times ahead, and I'll go and see him this week, actually, I'm going to go and see him, and yeah, very excited.
It was his birthday. Will he forgive Britain, do you think? I mean, will he forgive the Guardian newspaper, where I started my career on, still that printed so many equivocal pieces over the years, double-crossed him, lied about passwords that were... I think, because Niels Meltzer said that the Guardian, who's been on this show, the former UN rapporteur on torture now at the Red Cross, said it was these newspapers and media that were part of the psychological torture that they were putting upon your brother.
Yeah, look, even now you can see the legacy media and a lot of these so-called journalists sort of wanting to go out and signal to their friends in the intelligence community, you know, that they're still faithful to them. They're repeating old smears, not smears that aren't even... that the US even admits that
aren't
true.
I've got the Sulzberger thing here. Oh, that about he killed people, but
yeah,
revelations,
exactly
WikiLeaks
right,
killed people.
Exactly right.
I mean, are you going to sue every single one of them and get the cash?
Well,
and the New York Times, Sulzberger family's New York Times today, talking about James Clapper, the former National Security Office of National Intelligence, that said this show was somehow a threat to the United States. He, again, is saying things like, you know, he gave things unredacted. This was a problem. Little digs at him.
Yeah, so it's still going on now, but I think the proof's in the pudding. Julian's free. You know, the hard work has paid off. The millions around the world, the world leaders who have been advocating for Julian, it's all paid off. So these sorts of attacks and smears, you know, everybody can see now that...
Well, you say that, and the chief prosecutor, Robert Carr, saying no one was killed because of this genuine journalism that Julian Assange did. But Matthew Miller in Antony Blinken's State Department repeated the lie to the press, who, I don't know whether you saw that dismal press conference on the day your brother was released.
Well, it
made headlines here. I mean, this is the Dubai newspaper, Gulf News. That's the biggest story in the world, even bigger than Gaza.
Yep.
And the Gaza genocide, Assange, your brother, to be freed, a free man after 14 years. That is the biggest story, but Matthew Miller says that. What did you think of that press conference?
Yeah, well, I've seen Matthew Miller. He worked in the Obama Justice Department, and he's actually done interviews before he went to the State Department, saying there's a reason why we didn't pursue this case, that it posed a threat to the First Amendment, and that's why the Obama Justice Department didn't pursue it. And Matthew Miller's on record of saying that. And so it's very interesting to watch him change his tune. Now he's inside the State Department. But I think you really have to look at what the judge who accepted Julian's plea deal said. They said the US government cannot find a victim in relation to this so-called crime of journalism that Julian committed. So I think that's what's on the record, and that's what the judge said during that hearing. So you just have to look back to those sort of factual elements that it were accepted by a US judge and hold them up aside to what Matthew Miller's saying, and it just his arguments fall apart, right? It just doesn't make sense, and actually exposes those sorts of people for what they really are, in my opinion.
Yeah, and the redactions. I think at one point Julian asked me, the team there, I thought they went too far sometimes in the redactions. Why are they making out that the Guardian in particular, which is the one, you might have to tell our viewers, remind them, that it was them that leaked a password to unredacted WikiLeaks files?
That's right. Luke Harding and David Lee, who rushed out a book about the WikiLeaks leaks, or their version of it, they rushed out this book. And one of the chapter headings was a password to the encrypted file of the diplomatic cable set. And that was a password that Julian had given them. There was an element of that password called assault. And Julian explained to them, this element you can never write down, you can never share, because that sort of gives the password even more strength, having that assault element. And these journalists, you know, in their recklessness, published the whole password to this encrypted file. And so from that chapter heading, Der Freitag was able to research and find out that that was the password to the encrypted file. And then Cryptome, the website run by Zhong Yang, a US website, cryptome.org, was the first to publish the unredacted cable set. So Julian and WikiLeaks weren't even the first to publish this unredacted cable set. And I think part of the education process that we've been doing in this campaign is telling that story, that the people actually responsible for this unredacted leak are the Guardian journalists, David Lee and Luke Harding. Interestingly, Julian developed some tools that allowed the redaction of these vast troves of information, such as a program that would look for, that used the dictionary to search these war files and war logs for proper nouns and would take out those names. So he was at the forefront of this process of redaction. And at the time, journalists who were working with him said that people inside the traditional newsrooms were actually more reckless than Julian was when it came to redacting these names.
And as for more bad guys in the story, as it were, we know that, was his name Domscheit? A guy who double-crossed Julian in the early days. He destroyed perhaps valuable cables that would have given us an insight into the so-called war on terror in Afghanistan and Iraq. What else had to be destroyed? Or was nothing really destroyed as part of the plea deal? I know I'll get on to discovery, which was an element of the plea deal as well, but what was had to be destroyed? Julian Assange had to sign an affidavit that Kristin Rathenson, who's been on this show many times over the years, had destroyed what?
It was anything unpublished related to the Chelsea Manning leaks. That's my understanding from what Barry Pollack, Julian...
It doesn't matter if someone else has it already.
Well, yeah,
there was a dead man switch file.
Well, I guess so. But, you know, it was an instruction from the courts to Julian and WikiLeaks to destroy any of those files that hadn't been published already. I mean, interestingly, when Julian left after he was given permission to leave Sweden after answering questions in relation to into this sexual assault.
From his political asylum in
London. So at that time, his bags went missing when he took that flight from Sweden to the United Kingdom. And that those bags actually had even more of the Chelsea Manning leak that never saw the light of day, including some of the very well-known massacres in Afghanistan. So the video of those. So those are things that you know, we'll never see from this leak, that we'll never know about. And so, the historical impact of WikiLeaks speaks for itself, really, in what it was able to achieve over the years, and what these leaks actually meant to normal people, people who are who are just trying to make their lives better, who are trying to make correct decisions about who to vote for, you know, how to make simple, educated decisions about who they want their leaders to be, or the war in Iraq, for instance, that famous cable that...
I'll just stop you there, Gabriel.
Yeah, sure.
More of that in part two. More from the brother of WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with the brother of WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange, Gabriel Shipton. Gabriel, you were interrupted by me in part one when you were talking about the importance to normal, everyday people. If people don't know who Julian Assange is, just know him vaguely in legal proceedings that have been talked about for 14 years. It was, as you say, the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. I was talking about the stuff that was destroyed. There was no public interest defense. I know we're not legal scholars. Mm-hmm. When Biden's Justice Department in the plea deal told him you have to destroy some information that hadn't previously been published, there was no defense on Assange's legal team to go. But what if some of it is in the public interest? No.
No, and Julian actually, the one thing that Julian did say during this hearing is that that he didn't realise that the Espionage Act trumped the First Amendment. And I think that's clear. That was a very clear and direct message to everybody out there of what this what this plea deal and what this prosecution actually means is that...
Did you gulp? Because that was in the this colonial magistrate, US colonial magistrate, the islands where the US flew their B-29s to murder people in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And all that way, it's so close, and Julian Assange still said, watch out, judge, there's a conflict between your constitution and the Espionage Act.
Well, I...
Did you gulp?
No, I mean, this is we're talking about Julian Assange here. I think he would have had to say something, and he's very deliberate and very thoughtful about things like that he wants to say and frame things around things that he thinks are important. So I trust Julian. I have faith in his, you know, his ability to reason and make these determinations. But it was nerve-wracking. I was watching live. I'm sure many, many people out there were watching the live footage and just hoping that it was all going to go through, because I'm not sure. I don't really trust the United States and the justice system, but there were Australian diplomats there with him, the UK High Commissioner Stephen Smith, ex-Prime Minister Kevin
Not sure
Rudd.
About the UK. Oh, yeah, sorry, the UK High Commissioner.
Yeah, the Australian diplomats, yeah. Yes, that's right. And ex-Prime Minister Kevin Rudd, who's now the ambassador to the United States for Australia. They were there with him as a sort of, I guess, guarantor of his safety, and that he would get
They
back.
Needed someone that important to give us all a bit of confidence.
Yeah, that's right.
Because your sister-in-law, the wife of Julian Assange, Stella Assange, told the press, part of the plea deal means we can't now look into discovery into what they were doing as regards the assassination attempts, how Britain and the United States plotted to bombs in London, car chases, murder your brother. They're not allowed. But and then she looked pointedly at the press in Australia at the press conference and said, you can, though.
Yeah, that's right. Julian's waived his freedom of information rights in the United States, but the rest of the press haven't, obviously. So I think it's up to them to really dig around and get to the bottom of what's happened in this case. I think you mentioned those plots to kill Julian that were going around, sketches and plans within the CIA, plots to kidnap Julian that made it as high as the White House. And I think there's still a lot to uncover in that and in Julian's persecution. Famously, Keir Starmer's emails when he was at the CPS that mysteriously disappeared relating to his trips to Washington while Julian was in the Ecuadorian embassy. So there is a lot...
He might be Prime Minister now, as Keir Starmer. At the time of this recording, he's not. But...
Yes, and this will be a dark cloud, I think, over his Prime Ministership, if he is. So I think there is still a lot to uncover, and many people who have involved themselves in Julian's persecution over the years who have got dirt on their hands.
You don't take Keir Starmer's view that all the other documents were destroyed, as was the procedure. He was head of the Crown Prosecution Service, which was desperately trying to extradite your brother to Sweden for perhaps, I think most of us believe, extradition to the United States via a different route than the Espionage Act.
Yeah, that's right. He was head of the CPS at that time during that whole process, the longest running preliminary investigation in Swedish history. And there's those famous emails that were FOI'd by Stefania Maritzi, where the Swedish prosecutors emailing the UK prosecutors saying, we want to drop this, we want to come and question him so that we can move on and get rid of this investigation.
Because no charges of any sexual crime?
No, nothing, no charges ever laid. And they actually communicated to the CPS that they wanted to close it and bring it to an end. And the response was, This is about more than a normal extradition, don't you know? Don't get cold feet. And so I think that evidence is out there, and there will be more to come, I believe, as time goes by, as things become uncovered, more journalists dig into the record around Julian's persecution.
about the new British Prime Minister. Stefania Maritzi, who's been on this show, the great Italian journalist, has already answered your sister-in-law's call, put a FOIA in. I understand she's not getting anything until 2025. Randy Credico, the great American activist, of course, famously uncovering part of the UC Global investigation into what was happening as regards Trump's funded, one of Trump's funders that were involved, a company that was spying on perhaps you, your sister-in-law, your legal, Julian Assange's legal counsel, medical doctors, also Max Blumenthal. Of course, how safe is he in Australia? You know, we, I think John Pilger would always sometimes mention Gough Whitlam and how he was brought down by the British government, the former British Australian Prime Minister. He opposed the Vietnam War, US foreign policy. He was just taken out by the British government. That's what an Australia happens to an Australian politician if they oppose the United States. Albanese seems to be steadfast with your brother Julian Assange, and he hasn't been killed, let alone deposed. Or
well, I think the Australian government has walked a real tightrope in this situation. They've given the intelligence community, the National Security DOJ, a conviction, but they've also managed to secure Julian's freedom. And so I think they've satisfied both parties in that sense and played that man-in-the-middle diplomatic role. You know, you spoke about James Clapper before this. You know, he's come out saying, well, we've got what we wanted. Julian served his time. We've got a conviction. So there's this sort of messaging from the intelligence community that that they should be happy with this conviction and plea deal that the Australian government was able to broker. In terms of Julian's safety in Australia, he's incredibly popular with the Australian people. That day when he stepped off that plane onto the tarmac, I got thousands of messages. People were celebrating, popping bottles of champagne. Some people said, this is like Christmas. That was the feeling back in Australia. That's how popular Julian
is. I saw one person on Rupert Murdoch's ABC Sky, no, Sky, because Sky News in Australia is owned by the Rupert Murdoch organisation,
yeah,
as opposed to Comcast in other countries, saying he's a criminal and continuing to repeat this kind of thing.
Well, those are those these journalists that are so-called journalists that are totally out of touch with the public sentiment, and that's why those sort of statements, they don't really have any echo. They just sort of fall flat, particularly when Julian's walking around free in Australia. So I think really the public sentiment and Julian's popularity, Australians love an underdog. They love an underdog story, and he's one of ours. He's Australia's son, and he will be protected by the population and by his support there, I believe.
The hatred for him in the New York Times this week, clear, because they say, but he was against US imperialism. That makes it out different. Presumably alluding to him carrying that Gore Vidal book when he was dragged out by British security forces from political asylum in the Ecuadorian embassy. Why is it? Because Julian Assange exposed secrets of the Russian state, Putin's state, of China, of Iran. Why is it, do you think, that weirdly, it's countries, and presumably not things that Putin or Xi Jinping or Khamenei would like exposed, why is it these countries in the end said, no, he must be freed? And the United States, whose secrets, because Julian Assange's WikiLeaks organization was damned power. It was truth to power. It was exposing the secrets of the powerful. It didn't matter whether it wasn't anti-American. Why did the Americans hate WikiLeaks more?
Well, he embarrassed them. He embarrassed them. He embarrassed the way that they struck, the way that they rule the world, and the way that they use their power in countries overseas. These conspiracies between the institutions of state, the corporate media, and the corporations, Julian exposed those, and it threatened their whole system. It threatened their whole system of how they exercise power around the world. And they were frightened. They were very, very frightened that they wouldn't be able to hold on to that power. And so the solution was to go after Julian. And I think you can look at the timeline from 2017 of when they needed Julian off the scene in 2019. And so Julian's off the scene in 2019, and you see all these other factors, all these other areas where there were clampdowns on the free internet, and things started to change in Silicon Valley. I've spoken to people in Silicon Valley, and they said that revolutionary spirit after 2016, the revolutionary spirit and the spirit of the free internet was almost turned on its head in Silicon Valley after 2016. And these, all these corporations, all these social media corporations were turned on their heads and became sort of arms of the state to censor and to manipulate people. And I think what happened to Julian is actually in line with that real clampdown around 2019 and looking forward to 2020 and the last 4 or 5 years that we've lived through, and this sort of resurgence of the neoconservative project.
But ironically and finally, how important is it that President Donald Trump pardons him for the future of journalism, journalists all around the world? Because he still has this felony that he's pleaded guilty to, Julian Assange, to save his own life, pleading guilty to a crime he didn't commit. How important is it for the president to pardon?
Well, it's important for Americans. It's important for normal Americans. And the people I've seen in Congress, our allies within the Congress, have really recognized that what this has done, what this conviction has done, has criminalized journalism. It describes essentially investigative journalism. It's gone after the journalist-source relationship, publishing classified information, possessing classified information. That's all become illegal now under what's happened to Julian Assange. And there is a huge amount of concern in the United States. We just were talking off air about Ken Roth, the ex-head of Human Rights Watch, who's actually come out against this plea deal, saying that it is a real threat. And these elements that were used in the initial indictment, these sort of PR elements that to frame Julian as a hacker, they were completely left out of the plea deal, of the conviction. And so it's actually Julian is a journalist according to this conviction, and that is illegal. So,
well, if Ken Roth is saying that, and he's controversial, probably
no, exactly.
An insider, that's quite something. Gabriel Shipton, congratulations, and say hi to Julian Assange from all the team at Going Underground.
Yeah, thank you, Afshin.
Thank you. Our continued condolences also to those bereaved by UK-US EU armed genocide. We'll be back on Monday after this week's celebrations of OPEC Plus's Venezuela's Independence Day with the Grey Zone's Anya Parampil. Her new book, referencing Julian Assange's information, investigates the US-UK attempt to destroy the country with the world's largest oil resources. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media if it's not censored in your country, and head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Monday.